Morning, everyone. Take a minute to rearrange my furniture here. I want you to take a moment and open your copy of the Bible to Mark chapter 10. We're going to start there this morning, whether that's an analog or digital copy, whatever you have. Let me make a few pre-sermon announcements, I guess. We've had a busy summer. There's been a lot of coming and going, a mission team to Myanmar, teen mission trip, all kinds of stuff. This morning, a good number of our teens, their families, and some of the chaperones that went on the teen mission trip to Mountain States Children's Home are in Albany this morning visiting and worshiping with the Hill Street Church of Christ. I wanted to bring that up specifically because I just think it's important for us as a congregation to know what a great blessing God has given us in our kids. There's a girl from the Hill Street Church in Albany named Amanda Spencer, who went with our kids on the mission trip, and her parents, Ed and Joelle, invited our kids to come down for worship and for a barbecue because they just wanted to express their thanksgiving for our youth ministry and for our kids, including Amanda. Because for the Hill Street Church, Amanda is the youth group. And so our youth have been very, very encouraging to her and very encouraging to her faith. And how great for Ed and Joelle to see that, to recognize it, acknowledge it, and to want to make that known. So a bunch of folks are down there. And then we just have folks all over the place. I know we've had some casualties in a metaphorical sense from the Hood to Coast race. And folks are, camping, and people are just gone. So I just wanted to point some of that out, but especially our teens. And then I do want to follow up on part of what Don said. We do have congregational meeting tonight at 6 o'clock. And I want to encourage all of us to be there. We are going to do a lot of things. The lineup is pretty simple. We're going to have devotional. We're going to have our meeting. We're going to have a presentation from our Myanmar team. I am hoping that Darren shows up wearing his longji. Is that how you say it? Longji? I haven't seen Darren in a dress, but we'll see how that works out. And then afterwards, we're going to have ice cream, and I can guarantee there's going to be some homemade blackberry ice cream, which I'm looking forward to eating most of. But congregational meetings are important because they're a significant part of our life together. What's really going to be discussed and shared amongst us is how we as a congregation are living. So we're going to talk about the budget, life groups, the new theme for next year. And we are going to talk about a missions survey. Don mentioned this to those of you who are here last Sunday morning and not at Camp Dakota. But if you just take a minute and reflect, we've, as a congregation, we've just literally been all over the world in the past 6 months or so. And one of the things that we need to think through as a congregation is, where do we really want to focus our efforts in terms of our missions, local, regional, and beyond that? And so there'll be a survey that's given to you about that tonight. So I'm just going to encourage you, be at the meeting and be ready to be at the meeting, because all of us have a stake in it. We live together as a church, and we need to practice living and thinking together as a church. So, speaking of commercials, now that I've finished one, let me talk about one that has been in my mind. I'm assuming lots of you, like me, have watched a good amount of the Olympics. Really enjoyed the Olympics. Watched more of them than I should have, because I stayed up later than I should have, which made getting up a little harder. But the Olympics were great. A couple of the commercials were really good. And I think some of you have seen this one over and over. You know, there's this set of married couples hanging around the pool, and the women are sitting, in their chairs watching the men. And the women are on their phones looking up, the closest emergency care facility, because the men are figuring out their own private pool Olympics, which is a combination of sports. The men are putting together some way to use the skimming net from the pool as a pole vaulting pole to run up to the edge of the pool and then pole vault into the pool. And And of course, the first guy, you know, gives us a try, and his buddies are all cheering him on, and he misses the pool by about 6 feet and hits a plastic picnic table, which is really funny. But the best part is the next guy says, without even hesitation, second time is a charm. And grabs the pole and goes back to starting position. And, you know, that commercial just cracked me up, but it made me just start thinking about, there's lots of moments in people's lives where you have this question in your mind. This question, and this is what the women are thinking, is, what was he thinking? Right? And sometimes that question is, you know, kind of a lighthearted question, which is usually what women ask about what their husbands are doing when they hurt themselves. And then, of course, sometimes that question is more serious. And I want to approach that. I want to approach that topic. So let me just illustrate. And I was thinking, in terms of what we see thinking, the first thing that came into my mind was all that business in 2 Samuel 11 about David and Bathsheba. You know, you read that, and how that unfolds. David begins this adulterous affair, and then, of course, like anything, the cover-up is worse than the crime, right? And as you read that through the next couple of chapters of 2 Samuel, up to the point where the prophet Nathan confronts David, you know, you're reading that, and you just start thinking, man, what was David thinking? How did he get himself into that? How does he go from, you know, being king? He gets involved with the neighbor woman, and then he gets into a situation where he, you know, has to arrange the accidental death of his friend Uriah, and it just gets worse and worse. And you just see, you know, what was he thinking? And then I got to thinking about this passage in Mark chapter 10, and I'm going to point this out. This is just a really interesting passage. I'm going to start in verse 35, read part of this. This is in a section of Mark's gospel where he's chronicling Jesus' teaching, mostly to his disciples, where he's really emphasizing that being Messiah means being someone who suffers, dies, and is raised from the dead. He's reiterating this message over and over and over, and they're having trouble getting it. So he's been teaching that, and then look what happens in 35. James and John, the sons of Zebedee, come forward to him and say, "Teacher, we want you to do for us whatever we ask of you." And he said to them, "What do you want me to do for you?" And they said to him, "Grant us to sit one at your right hand and one at your left in your glory." But Jesus said to them, "You don't know what you're asking. Are you able to drink the cup that I drink, or be baptized with the baptism that I am baptized with?" They replied, "We're able." Then Jesus said to them, "The cup I drink, you will drink. And with the baptism that I am baptized with, you will be baptized. But to sit at my right hand or at my left is not mine to grant, but it is for those for whom it has been prepared." You know, you got to think, man, what were James and John thinking? I mean, that is a bold request, right? They're in the midst of this group, them and, you know, the rest of the 12 and this larger group of disciples who are following Jesus. And they find some opportunity to kind of quarter Jesus off by himself. And they want to make a request. You know? It's not a big request. "We just want you to do whatever we want you to do for us. That's all. That's all. Work with me." Right? You start thinking, man, what were James and John thinking? How do you get to that point? You've been following Jesus. He's been teaching and teaching and teaching about the kingdom of God. And you get to this point about wanting to sit at the right and left hand. And I think really what's driving this is that there is just for James and John, and there was for David, and there's for us as well. It really just is a matter of having a confused or unclear or deluded identity. Identity, of course, really is the question about who are we and who are we going to be. It's a question that all of us have to ask and have to answer. And it's much healthier if we do that on purpose than if we do it accidentally. But that's really where the failure for James and John is that they're developing an identity that really is not an identity that's coming from Jesus. Let me say, this is not that far from all of us, right? I mean, you can think about your own personal experience, your family, our church family, the world, right? Where we've experienced being confused about that, and we've been victimized by other people being unclear about who they are. So let's just say, you know, you have that situation where husband or wife comes home, tells husband or wife they've been engaged in some sort of affair and that they want a divorce and they're leaving the family, right? No one sees that coming, right? Or if they had seen it coming, they've been, you know, dreading it or whatever. And you ask yourself, well, how'd we get there? What was that person or what was that woman thinking? Really what's been going on in a situation like that is, you know, that person has already been cultivating a different identity than the identity of married husband, wife, father, mother. They've been working on developing that identity long before they get to the announcement or pronouncement of it. And I'll just make sort of an aside here. You know, that's one of the beauties of the internet now, right? Is that it functions in a way where it can function in a way where it's even simpler to develop that sort of identity. And of course, it seems, you know, private. It seems anonymous. I mean, when you're sitting in your car working on your phone, it seems like it's just you. Of course, that's not ever the truth about the internet. It's always public. It just doesn't seem that way. But it does work in a way, or it can work in a way, where people, all of us, use it to cultivate an identity, someone that we think we are that we really aren't, or someone that we think we want to be that we really aren't, or we cultivate relationships or habits that really are in direct conflict, fundamental dissonance with an identity with Jesus. And that's what James and John were doing. You know, somewhere in all this following of Jesus and learning and receiving and going out and preaching and like that, they're working on knowing who Jesus is, but at the very same time, they're cultivating a different identity. That's what David was doing as well. David is not thinking about himself, or was not thinking about himself, as the servant of Yahweh, as responsible for leading Israel into greater faithfulness in their covenant relationship with God. Instead, what he's really thinking is he's thinking about himself as King and Lord. And that's really what James and John were doing as well. They weren't thinking about themselves as servants. They were thinking about themselves as lords. And that's how Jesus corrects them. I'm going to finish this passage through verse 45. Imagine this, verse 41. James and John go and talk to Jesus about this, just the two of us. And sure enough, word gets out. It always gets out, doesn't it? When the 10 heard about this, they became angry with James and John. I love Mark's understatement. So Jesus calls them, all of them, and said to them, "You know that among the Gentiles, those whom they recognize as their rulers lord it over them, and their great ones are tyrants over them. But it is not so among you. Whoever wishes to become great among you must be your servant, and whoever wishes to be first among you must be slave of all. For the Son of Man came not to be served, but to serve, and to give his life a ransom for many." What Jesus does for James and John, and for the 10, and for everybody else that are his followers, is he reorients everybody. And what he reorients them to is the basic fact that their identity is dependent on his identity. This is, in Jesus' ministry, this is the greatest self-expression or self-revelation on Jesus' part in terms of what he says about who he is. This is really one of the two peaks of climax in Mark's gospel. And what he does for James and John and for the rest of the disciples is he makes it clear that who they are and who they are becoming is to be a product of his identity. He's the servant who gives his life as a ransom for many, so they therefore accordingly are also servants. He's the one that came to give. They also then are ones that come not to rule or exercise power, but instead to serve. And this really is the heart of Christian discipleship, is that we see and understand that Jesus is the source, pattern, and norm for who we are and who we're supposed to be. That's, excuse me, I got something in my throat. That's what leads us, or how I want to lead into this passage in Luke 24. So if you'll turn there, This is the passage that Joey read just a minute. And where is Joey? Joey, let me say to you in front of the rest of the congregation, I really appreciate you doing such a good job. It's very clear that you had prepared for that. And so thank you, Joey. Nice work. Really appreciate your preparation on that. In Luke's gospel, what Joey read is, this is the last interaction between Jesus and his disciples in Luke's gospel before his ascension all the way to the Father's right hand. He's been raised from the dead, and he's being raised all the way to the Father's right hand. And some of this is repeated at the beginning of Acts, which of course is volume 2 of Luke's gospel. But what Jesus does here is he repeats what he's done before. He reorients his disciples as to who he is and therefore to who they are. He recounts to them that everything that's happened to him has been the fulfillment of the scripture. He opens their mind to understand it, and then he says to them in verse 48, "You are witnesses of these things." Now, these particular folks were the first witnesses, right? They were eyewitnesses. And what I mean by that is, I don't mean that in a legal or investigative sense. They're not eyewitnesses in the sense that they just saw some things happen that they were disassociated with or detached from. What Jesus is really saying to these men and women is that they're witnesses in the sense that they actually participate in that. They didn't just know the things that Jesus did, or they didn't just observe what Jesus did from afar, or they didn't just see that he had been raised from the dead. They actually knew him. That their eyewitness, their witness was not impersonal, rather it was exceedingly personal. Because they knew these things, as he says, "You are witnesses of these things." But really what he's saying is, it's not just that you know these events, it's that you know me in these events. And that what you see there then is that fundamentally changes who they are. And as we continue to go along, it begins to be clear that it changes how they live. Let me just take a minute and say a thing about witness. So that's been our theme for the 2015-2016 congregational year, which is coming to an end. Next Sunday will be our last Sunday of that, and then September 11th will be the beginning of our new theme, which will be unveiled at our congregational meeting tonight. I just thought it might be good to just go back and think for a little bit about what we did this past year. Have you ever noticed that you can just kind of march along, and then, like, if you stop and think, what do we do as a congregation this year? Unless you, like, really think about it, it's hard to remember. I was sitting in my office thinking about this earlier this week, and I was thinking, well, what do we do about preaching and teaching and all that sort of thing? So let me just kind of chronicle these. Some of these I had to write down because I did forget, so I had to give myself a list. But so Darren and his preaching, and then tied with our life groups. Darren preached through Acts. He preached a series on Light of the World, City on a Hill. Preached through Jonah. Our life groups centered around or tied to those as well. We had Sunday morning and Wednesday night classes on Acts, on 1 Peter, on, pardon me, the woman's class on living a selfless life. There was a class on countercultural living, a class on prayer, a class on Hebrews. Let's see. Parenting, marriage, not in that order. Foundations of faith and turning points for Jesus. And we did this year as a congregation have our first ever Sunday morning college age class. And that's just sort of a summary of some of the things that we did together on Sunday mornings and Wednesday nights. And of course there was lots of other things. Let me illustrate something. You know, I think that's how God works on us. Right? Like, you can sit down and you have to like deliberately really work on thinking, what things did we study? What things did we do in life group? You have to recall those experiences. But in the course of being exposed to God's word all that time, his word is actually working on shaping us. You just can't always pinpoint all the turning points that happens in. So I thought it might be good to just reflect on that. What Jesus tells his disciples is, he says, "You are witnesses of these things." And Really, what he's reminding them for the millionth time is that because of who he is, they have a different identity. They're not who they were before they started, and they're going to continue to be changed by God to be somebody else. And that is really what happens in the course of following Jesus. You know, that was sort of the trouble after Jesus is put to death, and they really don't anticipate he's going to be raised from the dead. What do most of them do? They go back to doing what they were doing before. After Jesus' resurrection, he goes out to the Sea of Galilee because he knows that's where he's going to find the fishermen. After his resurrection and those appearances, you know, they don't go back to fishing. Right? That's the end of that older identity. They really, because of his resurrection and the way that he helps them to see this as the fulfillment of what God's doing, they become different people. So I want to say a few things about being witnesses, because that's what we've been thinking about. First of all, we need to remember as witnesses that really what's at the center of that witness is Jesus himself. And the good news about what God has accomplished in him. There's lots of things that can creep into our life as a church and our individual discipleship that want to pose themselves as being central and of most importance. But really what has to be at the center all the time is Jesus and the good news about him. That is really what being a witness is about. That we are not witnessing to events, we're witnessing to the person of Jesus that includes these events. And that we're witnessing to what God has done in him. And that we are giving witness by how we live, what we say, etc. That he is the one who has been raised from the dead. He is the one who has rescued us from sin and death. He is the one in whom we have true hope. We also say, being witnesses like we see here is what we do together. Discipleship to Jesus, witness to Jesus, always happens in groups. If you spend a little bit of time reading the New Testament, it's very clear that it's written to the churches. Witnessing, being a disciple of Jesus, is not a solo experience. It is, by God's design, a congregational experience. That is how we know who Jesus is. That's how we live out our identity with him, is that we do it together. Because that's what he's actually doing. And I think this is important for us to think about, that the church is what Jesus is doing. The church is not a means that Jesus is using to accomplish something. The church is actually what he's accomplishing. The church is who he died for. The church is who he has rescued from sin. The church is where his spirit lives. The church is who he is coming back for. Thank you, Mike. So if that's the case, that's what we need to be doing and thinking as well. And then last, this identity with Jesus is thoroughgoing. It's complete. There's not a part of us that is exempted from discipleship to Jesus. I have a good friend, an older guy, that used to say, you know, when you're baptized, you might as well take your pocketbook with you. Because he was emphasizing, you know, that becoming a Christian person means it changes the way you handle your finances. Becoming a disciple of Jesus changes or dictates or directs everything about us. How we carry on our marriages, how we carry on in our families, how we work, how we treat our co-workers, what our hobbies are, all that. There's nothing about who we are that's exempt from an identity with Jesus. That's one of the great things about the symbolism of baptism. That, you know, in being baptized, a person really is immersed into Jesus and his church. And that in the churches of Christ, we practice full immersion. You want to dunk them all the way down there and maybe even hold them for a sec to make sure. Right? And there's a symbol of what God is doing there, that he's rooting that person in a new identity with Jesus, and that it's a full identity, that it's thoroughgoing. Let me point out how this passage in Luke 24 ends. Verse 50, Jesus leads them out as far as Bethany. They're used to this. They've followed him all over the Middle East. And lifting up his hands, he blessed them. While he was blessing them, he withdrew from them and was carried up into heaven. And they worshipped him and returned to Jerusalem with great joy and were continually in the temple blessing God. That's the right response to who Jesus is worship. And that's One of the reasons, that's why we gather for worship. I mean, that's what we're doing here this morning. We worship not just in singing, in prayers, in hearing the word preached. In a few minutes, we're going to worship in sharing the Lord's Supper. And I just want to say a couple of things for us to think about worship. You know, worship essentially is about two things. Number one, it's about the church declaring who the one true and living God is. Worship is proclamation. It is declaration. It makes clear who is God and that we are loyal to Him. And then worship reminds the church. I don't know about you folks, but the most important things are the things I always forget. And honestly, I really can't. It's a struggle to remember the most important things every day. And I think Jesus knows that about us. I mean, what he said to his disciples about the Lord's Supper is, remember me. And that doesn't just remember Jesus as a historical figure, but remember him as the one that we know, who knows us, who was raised from the dead. And there are times that I catch myself, and probably you do too, where you start thinking about Jesus as a past tense guy. We talk about, you know, Jesus way back. It's funny, isn't it? Because the heart of Christian faith is that Jesus was raised from the dead. That he is past tense and present tense. That he's at the Father's right hand. And that we need then to remember that. We need to be reminded of that. And we need to worship him. So in a minute, we're going to sing. That's going to be some of the rest of our worship. And then we're going to share in the Lord's Supper, and we should be remembering our baptism and our immersion into Jesus. And maybe between now and then, we're going to have an invitation. And let me say a couple things about that. Maybe there's some part of your identity that you need to confess, right? Maybe there's something happening in your life where you're thinking, what was I thinking? Right? That happens to all of us. Maybe you want to use the invitation to make known that you need the church's prayers and support about something, about overcoming sin in your life. Or maybe you just want the church to know how grateful and thankful you are for Jesus and for his love for us. Any of those things are good. But above all, while we sing this morning and as we keep living together as a church, let's remember that it's Jesus that we follow and it's him who is our model. Thanks.